Well, dear friends, I confess that I feel a little pressure today because this is my last sermon to you as part of the pastoral team here at Parkview. And I realized about a month ago that the gospel text for this Sunday truly was, or is, the farewell speech, the farewell discourse of Jesus that he shares with his disciples. And then yesterday, I had a wonderful time with the elders of our church, and it wasn't exactly Jesus with his disciples for the Last Supper, but it was Pastor Barbara with her elders for the last breakfast. And it was a wonderful time. And then I opened the Daily Record yesterday, and in the little insert of the parade, it reminded me that today, May the 6th, today of all days, is World Laughter Day. And when I said that to John, he said, well, you better include some jokes in your sermon. Now, it does say World Laughter Day. It's a good reason to look at the lighter side of life. After all, smiling or laughing is good for your health and your soul. Well, we know that. And there's nothing like a good chuckle to bring the world together. And I thought, oh my word, now I have to do that to bring the world together in addition to having a sermon that's going to cover the text. Well, I wish I had known this earlier. Because I could have ordered from Amazon an adult coloring book as a parting gift for Phil that is entitled, I Run on Coffee, Sarcasm, and Lipstick. I know one of those is right. And it says, this is the perfect way to relax and have a good chuckle. Well, I didn't follow through on that, but I went to my reliable source, the Pickles cartoon strip. Some of you are a fan of Pickles in our DNR. If you haven't started or haven't read that, it would be good. But it's this elderly couple, Opal and Earl, correct? And here we have Opal standing in front of a full-length mirror with her bathrobe on and looking kind of rumpled. And she says, yesterday someone told me that I'm aging gracefully. I hate that. And her husband Earl is saying, well, why? It's a nice compliment. Wrong, 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 she says. It's just a nice way of saying, you're slowly looking worse and worse and worse. I don't know about you, but I know that feeling. Truly, the gospel text is from John, and it is Jesus' farewell discourse, his speech. And he is in this threshold time of his life where he's still with the disciples, but he's trying to prepare them for the future and what's going to happen. And we find in those chapters of the farewell discourse that Jesus truly is the one who loves. But he's not going to abandon them and leave them with nothing, and so he promises to them the Holy Spirit that's going to fill them, comfort them, empower them, and be with them forever, even after his departure. And if you take just the section for today, truly the thrust of that passage and the focus is on the phrase, love each other as I have loved you. Over and over again, he reminds the disciples, even after I am gone, love each other. I could say that to you, my friends. Even after I'm no longer your pastor, continue to love each other as Christ has loved you, as Jesus has shown us how to love, as I have tried to love you to give it, receive that love. Well, today I want to share with you some glimpses of my own journey when I have found myself standing on a threshold. And at the end, I want to conclude by saying, and where are we, you and me, where are we now as we stand on the threshold of something new? What do we mean by threshold? Well, the word originally referred to the doorway leading to the place where the wheat and chaff were sorted, where the grain was sorted to wheat and chaff onto the threshing floor. Sometimes we say, well, we're standing between, in between something, or betwixt and between something. Sometimes we use the phrase liminal space. And the Latin root limen actually means literally threshold. So liminal space, threshold, is a time of transition from one thing to another, from one room to another, from one realm to another. Some of us women here at Parkview are part of a group of singers called the Threshold Choir. And we go at the invitation of hospice or family to sing at the bedsides to bring comfort to those who are at life's thresholds. Richard Rohr calls liminal space a space where human beings hate to be, but where the biblical God is always leading them. Standing on the threshold may require us patience to wait, and we don't all do that very well. It's not part of our DNA. It's not part of what is taught to us in our Western culture. Thresholds can be huge and transformative. They can also be very simple and very small. Sometimes they become joyous occasions and times where God surprises us. Sometimes those thresholds or liminal space bring us unease and discomfort. It's usually a time when we are anticipating or moving into unknown territory. The biblical narrative gives us many examples of persons or groups that are in liminal space or on a threshold. Think of the Old Testament, Joseph in the pit, put there, what now? The Israelites wandering in the wilderness between Egypt and the promised land. Jonah in the belly of the big fish. Mary weeping at the empty tomb. The disciples huddled together in the upper room. The disciples on the road to Emmaus. Well, I have experienced threshold several times, this liminal space. When I was 16 or 17 years old, probably in grade 11, my dad came to me one day and asked this question. Are you sure you want to go to college? Yes, I said, I want to go to college. I don't know what I want to do or be. I know I don't want to be a nurse or secretary or teacher. And that seemed to be about the three options for women of my generation. I don't know what I want to be. I just knew I didn't want to be certain things. And nothing against any of you who chose those careers. It just wasn't me. My dad continued, well, if you go, you probably will meet your husband, settle down and have a family, implying, do you need a degree for that? I understood more clearly in later years why he even asked that question. My dad completed only ninth grade. My mother completed only eighth grade. And higher education was not particularly encouraged or emphasized or seen as important, let alone necessary, especially for a young woman of my generation. I was growing up at the time on a small dairy farm in Pennsylvania, and I knew that money was tight for my family. Debt was high. Managing expenses was challenging. And I was a very average student. I wasn't recruited in colleges. I received no awards or scholarships. I don't even remember if I was on the honor roll very consistently. My graduating class was 304. I knew that going to college would mean sacrifice, saving, getting loans, borrowing money, working jobs, and all of that happened. I knew my parents wanted what was best for me, and they would see that it happened. Threshold number one for me, heading off to Bluffton College, now university, 500 miles away. I sensed it was the right thing to do and the right place. But whoa, what did I know about the next 4 years? What would that mean for me? And some of you know what it's like to be in that place, going off to college or service, and are in that space right now. Well, my dad was somewhat correct. I went off to college. I found my husband, and a good one. Or he found me. And then I did what many young women did of my generation. We followed our husbands. We followed their careers, their jobs for study or service. And it was the era of the Vietnam War, and John was registered as a conscientious objector. We had also talked about someday, somewhere, we wanted to serve. Now seemed to be the time. So in 1970, I followed John to Kenya, East Africa, for 3 years, where we served with Mennonite Central Committee's Teachers Abroad program. And it was transformative. It was one of the best decisions we ever made. It was also hard, and at times lonely. This was before computers, cell phones, smartphones, and the only communication we had with our parents and family were weekly airmail letters that we sent and received regularly for 3 years. And both sets of parents kept every one of them. It's my journal of 3 years of our time there. Every 3 months, it felt like Christmas when the boat mail came. The boat came to Mombasa Harbor, and that mail went across the country to our little town in the bush where we were living and teaching. And we absorbed and read over and over 3 months' worth of Sports Illustrated and Good Housekeeping and church periodicals and the newspapers that we had subscribed to. We were newlyweds, and we depended on each other. Our love grew, and together we learned to love the Kenyan culture, its people, and the 480 students that we tried to teach. When our term was over and we left Kenya, I followed John to Elkhart, Indiana, so he could attend seminary for 2 years. It was there that our first son was born. And then I followed John to Kitchener, Ontario, Canada, so he could teach math and Bible for the next 4 years at Rockway Mennonite Collegiate. And there, our second son was born. And as parents, we found joy, much joy, in parenting and being part of the Canadian scene. Most days, I enjoyed being an at-home mom. And I was glad I had those years together with my sons. But when I was home all day, the walls began to close in on me. The Canadian winters were long and cold, and that snow was deep outside our window. And John was at school all day, wrapped up in his teaching and coaching and all the expectations that Mennonite high schools put on their teachers. We made the decision to move back to the States to be closer to at least one set of parents and grandparents. While we were in Canada, my 62-year-old mother died. And soon after we moved to the States, my father also died. And here I was, 31 years old, and both of my parents were gone. Our move back to the U.S. took us to a small Indiana town of Union City. It was about an hour from John's folks. So I followed John so he could teach math and physics at the high school. Both of our boys started elementary school there, and for 4 years we were Methodists. And one day, I realized I was restless and even bored. My sons didn't really need me quite as much anymore, and they adjusted well to school and loved it. And I soon discovered that being a waitress in a family restaurant and doing substitute teaching was not going to fulfill me for the rest of my life. And one day, my husband, John, said, "Why don't you consider taking some seminary classes? I think you would enjoy it." There was no seminary in Union City. And actually, there was very little in Union City, except a lot of good people. But Earlham College, Richmond, Indiana, was 45 miles away, and on that campus was this small Quaker seminary, Earlham School of Religion. We drove there one day, explored some possibilities, and I registered for a class. But a short time later, John, my wise, thrifty, money-managing husband said, "If you're going to drive 45 miles for one class, you might as well take a full load and get your money's worth out of it." Makes sense? Thrifty, being, you know, practical. Well, I followed his suggestion. There may have been times later that he regretted making that suggestion. Threshold number two. Entering seminary. What in the world was I thinking? What was I getting into? Suddenly, I went from reading Dr. Seuss and Richard Scarry and Judy Blume books to my sons, and I was now reading theology and history, early church history. I learned the names and heard names of people that I'd never heard of before, and I couldn't always understand what was happening. But this small Quaker seminary was warm and welcoming, and I loved it. This eclectic group of students on campus welcomed me and made me feel at home. I was the only Anabaptist Mennonite that year at ESR. And I tried to represent us well. And during that year, my heart was touched. God opened my eyes, my ears, my heart to something new. And continuing down this path seemed to be the right thing, the obedient thing. I felt some opening, some window, some blooming, some spark, whatever you want to call it. something was happening. And I kept saying, oh, Lord, could an average student, a Pennsylvania farm girl, now with a family that included two young sons, make it through a seminary degree program? Well, we discerned together. John supported me totally. And we decided to return again to Elkhart, Indiana, so that I could finish my Master's of Divinity at a Mennonite seminary, and so that we could reconnect with the Mennonite faith community. This time, John followed me. We moved to Elkhart, where I completed my Master of Divinity by taking 2 years, a full load of classes. It was hard work. And it put stress and strain on our family life and our marriage relationship. But we got through it. We persisted through some hard trials and tribulations. Threshold number 3. Completing a 3-year Master of Divinity degree and then adding an additional year of clinical pastoral education at South Bend, Indiana, I was now ready for what and where. And let me tell you, positions for a seminary-trained woman pastor in the Mennonite Church in the mid-1980s were few and far between. I was discouraged. How long would I have to wait? What would I have to do now? Was I not being obedient to this call that I sensed and that grew within me over time? Was there a possibility out there somewhere for me to share my gifts, my training? Would it ever come? John and I began to explore the possibility of working together as a team. And we met with some wise persons who helped us explore and test the possibility, discerned that direction. We both had seminary training, and we had complementary gifts and personalities and interests. Maybe this was the direction. We found more opportunities opened up to us. We explored a few, and we eventually accepted the position as co-pastors at the Orville Mennonite Church in Wayne County, Ohio. And it was stepping into new territory for that congregation and for us. Did I get into pastoral ministry in the Mennonite Church on the coattails of my husband? Probably. Am I particularly happy about that or proud? No. But sometimes God surprises us, and sometimes you just do what you have to do. The congregation had to work through some issues along the way. What would it be like, they asked, to have a husband and wife team? What about women in leadership? Are they all on the same page on this? And a woman who, yes, wanted to preach and to share that with John, with her husband. All new issues for that congregation to deal with. And we had our own issues. How would working together be for our marriage and our family life? Well, we made the move, and we found a warm, welcoming congregation, a congregation that allowed us to develop and mature as leaders, as pastors, over 14 years. We had much in our life experiences that we brought to that, but we were first-time pastors. And this congregation, Orville, and the larger community held and carried us through the most painful experience of our lives, losing our 22-year-old son, Andy, in a tragic accident. It was hard to get through our own grief. It was also hard to be in leadership, to have a public presence in the community and the church, because they too were mourning a son. They loved our sons and they loved Andy. So we tried to work through our own grief and we tried to help a congregation work through their grief, and we leaned heavily on others. Ohio Conference pastors, other colleagues in pastoring in our community, and a whole host of friends, neighbors, and loved ones. After 14 years of working together, we decided we needed a break. And so we resigned as co-pastors at Orrville. And soon after, very soon after, I pursued the position here at Parkview that had just been posted. And I applied and went through the process with you and was called. And the rest is history. Threshold number 4, anticipating retirement. A new chapter yet to be written. After 21 plus years in pastoral ministry, and almost 17 of those years here, how does one step aside for another and do that graciously? How does one enter a new phase to step across the threshold into something new? How does one let go of a role, of responsibilities, of position, and do so graciously? I'm learning step by step. But what about you, my brothers and sisters, my dear friends here at Parkview? You too are standing on a threshold, anticipating change, worrying, wondering, what will this summer be like for us as we move out of this space for 3 months? What will it be like to have someone new in leadership who will not be me, who will not have the same gifts, the same personality? What will it be like? Change almost always creates anxiety and disruption to our routine, and the regular rhythm of our lives is often disturbing. And some people can go with the flow quite easy. Others might see it as a new adventure with new possibilities. And there will be times, and I guarantee some already happened, when we feel vaguely disoriented or greatly disoriented. But these months can be a significant turning point, I believe, in the life of this congregation. And from my own experience, I know that being in this liminal space requires acceptance of mystery and a heart full of trust. It means having faith that something good can come out of this and believing that it will happen. The challenge is to give ourselves fully to the process of change while being unsure and unclear of how the future will unfold and how we will be affected individually and collectively, corporately. We may need to remain in this holding pattern, this liminal space, long enough to gain the lessons we need to learn and the clarity to know when it is time to move forward and the stamina and the courage to take that first step. And if we rush ahead too fast, too soon, we may find that God has a subtle way of putting in a speed bump to slow us down. My brothers and sisters, my hope and prayer is that in the next few months you will be able to participate in creative Sabbath experiences, to find new ways to build community and to learn to love God more fully and more deeply. As Jesus said to his disciples, love each other as I have loved you. I want to say, love each other as I, Pastor Barbara, also love you. And then in the fall, return home. Return to this place. Plan a celebration, a housewarming. I don't know. Call it whatever. Come back. Share insights of what your summer was like. How was community built? How did you continue to love and care for one another? May God continue to lead you. The Spirit continue to nudge you in following Jesus more faithfully into the future. And may we be able to move forward joyfully and hopefully with endless songs, even above earth's lamentations, and even through challenges, trials that may come. Please join me in singing together, My Life Flows On.